This is the Leadership and Insurance Podcast, brought to you by FinPro Search Partners.
Insurance companies are businesses and they need to look for the long term and be sustainable.
We went from zero to one and now it's going from one to 100.
Insurance as a concept, as a kind of service, is brilliant. The execution is what we're looking at now.
I think the companies that are going to succeed are the ones that are going to understand and master the art of intent.
When we talk about innovation, we lean too heavily to think about technology and we don't think about creating a culture of innovation.
I think innovation is essentially continuous improvement of existing processes and platforms and product.
Right? It's got to be easy. It's got to be seamless.
Good morning and welcome to the Leadership and Insurance Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Bond, and I'm very lucky today to be joined by Aaron, who's CEO, co-founder of Obi. I was going to say, I don't need to point that out because you've come with the branding today, but not everyone is watching this. And in fact, very few people probably are. It's much more likely to be listened to. So, Aaron, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alex. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, no problem. Well, again, it's a business that I've kind of walked from afar and looked at and listened to. I'm really interested to get into this. I've been really lucky lately. I won't lie. It's like sometimes we speak to net new businesses that we don't know, other businesses like yours that we're trying to track down and we really want to get on our show. So, Aaron, if you'd be so kind just to sort of introduce yourself and the OB business, just for those people that aren't aware of you.
Yeah, of course. So, my name is Aaron. I'm one of the two co-founders here at Obi Insurance. We are a insurance technology company that is hyper-focused on the residential real estate investment space. So we take the boring, typical rental dwelling insurance product that has kind of sat on the shelf for a lot of carriers. We brought that, tried to make it fun again, right? Trying to make insurance sexy again. That's really where our focus is at. And then within that, we've tried to develop a product where we're super focused on creating a collaborative and consultative environment through an instant insurance product. So we embed ourselves directly inside of any place where a real estate investor is buying, selling, or managing the transaction process. And then how, both for the partner that we have that's distributing our product, as well as for that end consumer, how can we make their lives easier, right? How can, as you're going through the closing process of a new rental property, how can we make insurance not be that, you know, that pain in the butt item that, you know, you need to make sure that you check off and make sure it's correct so that way you don't end up at the closing table with issues. So that's really the focus of the business today. We're about 100 employees, been around for several years here and really just getting started.
Amazing stuff. And I realized I made a mistake right at the start of the episode because I said CEO and that's your brother Ryan's the CEO, I believe.
Yeah, that's fine though. I'm happy to take the title from him. Yes, I co-founded the company with my brother Ryan. His background was real estate, private equity. Mine was a myriad of starting and growing other businesses. I've had my insurance license for a while. So he got really frustrated with his insurance experience. And one day we said, you know, why don't we go out and do a crazy thing and try and build an insurance product ourselves?
Yeah, you've got to take us back to there because I found this fascinating about you, particularly your journey into insurance, because you just got your license because you got frustrated and saw it as a bit of a side hustle. If I'm doing that purely from memory when we spoke previously.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, it was it was out of complete necessity, right? We were trying to understand this market. Ryan was buying real estate investment assets. We had bought a couple of things together as well to get my feet wet into the space and really just got my insurance license to start, you know, one, kind of testing these markets, also kind of hustling our other really small accidental landlord friends, right? And tried to get them some insurance products, get a really good understanding and get smart pretty quickly on this space. And so that's really where this came from. It was one of those items where we felt like from our own personal experience that insurance as a business owner, and that's how we viewed it, it was one of our largest line item expenses, but the one that we had the least amount of control and insight into. And that's really where this came into is that, you know, if it's your own home or it's your auto policy, you know, you have to buy it, right? It kind of comes with the territory. But when you're buying something for a business, you really do care about that, you know, that P&L and that financial statement and, you know, what are the levers that I can pull? And so being an insurance agent, we went into a lot of the typical carriers, and it's not a function of your agent necessarily being bad or the carriers not wanting to provide that kind of consultative experience. It's just that the systems have been, you know, built so long ago, they're not configured for that, right? We wanted to be able to sit there and say, what does the price look like at $1,000 deductible? Well, what at 2,500? What at 5,000? What at 10,000? What at 25,000? Any of your, you know, insurance agent or carrier rep listeners, right? Well, will know that like that's the worst type of agent, right? You don't want to be asked for all of the different configurations. And so we said, you know, there has to be a better way to do this. There has to be somebody, you know, on the other end of the screen that it, you know, as an underwriter is sitting there in front of an Excel spreadsheet and running this model. Why can't computers do that? Right? How can we build a platform that provides that consultative experience while then also providing a really nice and easy to use platform for the consumer, for our partner, or for any of the independent agents that use us as well?
It really resonates to me. And it's really funny talking about this today. So you have to bear with me on this. There's connecting line. I'm just trying to change my flight. I'm flying to the States, and then I'm flying internally to Austin. But originally I was just going to Austin directly. Now I have to go to New York, and so I'm phoning BA, you know, one of the world's biggest airlines, and I'm just trying to get this information. They could only go on an individual. I have to pick a specific flight on a specific date, a specific time, and then they can give me the price differential and back. And it kind of speaks to that. We have a lack of kind of, I don't understand that in today's world. In 2024, I'm like, how can that not be put into a computer that spits out a price and just tells what it is? And bring it back to what, you know, the problem that you're solving. It's like, there are these variables and these levers that we can pull on insurance, and it kind of changes the outcome of what the cover is, what the risk is, what the price is. And as the consumer and as the kind of person trying to acquire that insurance, shouldn't be that complicated, but it is. Surprising you that it still is. You know, that, was that one of the kind of realizations when you started to look into it? It's like, why is this so complex?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we sat there. We, you know, we did our homework. We talked to a bunch of real estate investors. They were obviously frustrated, so we knew that there was a market there. We went. We talked to a bunch of different independent agents. And they said, sure, we'd love to pull every different variable, every different combination for our clients. But, you know, either the underwriter or the carrier rep doesn't want to do that, understandably, right? That's every single PDF that they have to pull, right? The unfortunate system that they use. And then you go to the carriers and you say, like, hey, as that underwriter, you're the one getting these submissions. Well, if I want to see, you know, I want to see what the price looks like at $1,000 deductible. $50,000 deductible. I want to add more replacement costs. I want to add less. I want to add this deductible, right? Like all of the different variables that you see inside of a 100-page policy contract, I want to be able to see what the impact is for me as an owner. And they said, oh no, like we can't do that, right? Not that they don't want to, but that every one of those is go in, make the change, hit export, right? Hit quote, export it to a PDF, put it in a file. And like, nobody's going to do that for 10 different quotes for you. Maybe you get three, right? And so that, I think that was the light bulb moment that there was, you know, there's 17 million individual landlords in the United States. And this product just has kind of sat on the shelf. And it's very akin to a lot of the other innovations that have happened in the insurance space. And so that was really that light bulb moment. We sat there, we said, okay, can we do this better? And to your point, why hasn't this been done? And I think so much of this is, you know, and you see this in the fintech world as well, insurance carriers make really, really good money, right? Like it is a very predictable industry that people can get a lot of leverage on. You can get debt on. It is produced really good returns for everyone from the local investor in their 401k all the way up to Warren Buffett. But the problem is with that is, most of these companies are getting a new CEO, or maybe a new CTO every 3, 5, 7, 10 years. If things are already really working well enough, right, and you're making record profit year over year, do you want to be the person that says, hey, listen, we're going to throw out this code that we built 20 years ago. We're going to build something brand new. It's going to break a lot, right? It's going to be really painful. But 5 years from now, it'll be worth it. Nobody wants to take that risk. And I think, and that's understandable, right? The businesses are doing well. And so I think that really forced our hand into saying, what can we do? What can we do as a small, nimble team focused on this one niche segment? Can we be impactful there?
I've talked a few times on this podcast about it. You know, I think, you know, it's one of those, It's one of those conundrums where publicly traded companies, it's incredibly difficult to innovate because the leadership has completely different alignment to the consumer. The alignment's with the shareholders, and the shareholders just want shareholder value. And so exactly that, making those long-term bets, long-term investments, it's just almost impossible, even if the logic is completely solid. But, you know, we can't solve that on this podcast, so we're kind of slightly outside our purview. It's a really interesting part of our conversation when we spoke previously. You described yourself as embedded 2.0 in our conversation. So I kind of just wanted to unpick what you meant by that.
Embedded 2.0 in my mind is now taking the really good initial foundation of recognizing that the first foray into embedded insurance was where can we put insurance in front of the day-to-day consumer where it is most convenient for them to buy something, right? You just talked about the trip you're going to take on British Airways, right? At the end of your checkout process, there was undoubtedly an option to add trip insurance, right? Or trip protection insurance. I was at a Target here in Chicago, and as I'm checking out with one of my electronics in the self-checkout lane, the moment I scanned that, immediately popped up an opportunity for $5, $10, whatever it might be, for a 1 or a 2 year warranty on that product, right in front of my face. You've been able to purchase, you know, warranty products forever, but the ability to put that value add service and that value add product in front of somebody at that point of sale, I think has really started to evidence the fact that you can be really deliberate and impactful and beneficial by putting an insurance product in front of a consumer at that perfect time of purchase. Embedded 2.0 is now looking at, I think, a little bit more of a complex product where as a business owner or, you know, construction sites or restaurant owners, in us in the real estate investment community, how can we take a little bit more of a complicated product, not just a one-time purchase, right, of trip insurance, renter's insurance, the warranty products. How can we now look at this and say, okay, you've got a year-long policy, right? You have other stakeholders. You have a lender or a bank that's a part of that. You have a property manager that also needs to be involved there. How can we take an otherwise challenging process and make it easier for many of the different stakeholders who are in that chain? So I'll give you an example, and we talked about this. I mentioned this a little bit at the beginning. Every loan or almost every property in the United States, 95% of the rental properties, they have a mortgage on them. And that mortgage company and that lender requires you to have certain types of coverages of insurance. But for most lenders in the United States, between 12 and 18% of loans are actually held up close to or at the closing table because that borrower has the wrong insurance, right? Nobody paid attention to page 50 on your loan closing documents. And so you might have a $300,000 or a $500,000 general liability limit, but your lender requires $1 million. Right. And so what we've done both for lenders or marketplaces or property managers is we embed OB directly into that transaction experience and that relationship experience. But then we also solve the problems for the embedded partners that we already have. So we're making it easy for their customers to get insurance, and that's really good for them. But we go to somebody like a lender and we say, we're going to hard code your requirements directly inside of OB. So if this is Alex Bond's mortgage company here in the US, and you only require $1 million in general liability coverage, you have a certain mortgagee clause that needs to be written in a specific way, you have a loan number that needs to go onto that document, we'll hard code all of that. So that way, Aaron, the borrower, when you send me that link to say, hey, you can go out and get your own insurance, but here's one that you can get instantly right now, and it'll be compliant with all of our requirements. I know then that when I deliver that proof of insurance back to you, you don't have to have or hire an insurance compliance department. You don't have to take a double look at that. You know that if it's coming from OB, it's already compliant. You can check that step of your closing process off the list. And so again, our goal is not only making it a nicer insurance experience for the end consumer, whoever that might be, but how can we also eliminate a lot of those pain points for the partners that we interact with and who interact with insurance on a day-to-day basis?
It's really interesting. I think that's interesting because my next follow-up question was essentially along the lines of how do we get the consumer to sort of care about embedded insurance? Because I've seen lots of offerings. We talked to a lot of the investment community. there's a lot of embedded offerings that aren't getting people to buy it. You know, that's the important thing. But I think what you're changing, where that question was changing as you were talking, was like, how do we get our partners to care about embedded insurance?
100%. And I think the other nuance there too is I don't have to buy trip insurance. I don't have to buy warranty products. I don't have to buy renter's insurance really if I don't want to. I don't have to buy some of these. I don't have to buy insurance for my rental car that I pick up. I should, but I don't have to. There are a lot of segments within insurance where you're required to have that coverage. If it's commercial auto and you've got a trucking company, right? You need that certificate every time you pull into one of those depots. If you're buying a rental property, that lender requires you to have insurance. And so people don't like doing things that they feel like they're required to do. So if you can align the incentives and you can align the end goal with both the consumer and our partner, I think that's where the magic of embedded 2.0 is, right? The lender doesn't want to sit there and reading evidence of insurance and certificates and, you know, your Lloyd's certificate. They don't want to run through that if they don't have to. They don't know insurance. They're hoping that, you know, you did it correctly. The borrower is sitting there thinking, wow, this was such a pain to actually get this coverage. Like, I got to go through it. It's not enjoyable. I'm just going to leave this to the end. Hopefully my borrower doesn't bug me about it until we get closer to the closing day. You know, if you can alleviate that, and Alex's lending company sends me a link that says, hey, the next step in our process is getting insurance, drag and drop a copy of your evidence of insurance right here, or you can get an instantly compliant policy with OBI in 2 or 3 minutes. That, I think, again, like that's where you can align those. No one's ever going to love insurance. My auto renewal is coming up in a couple of weeks. I need to reshop it. I'm not super happy with it. But you know, if that process is as easy as, you know, I think the phrase we use a lot here, if you can make the process as easy as buying insurance on your couch on a Saturday morning without having to talk to anybody and be able to feel like you were put in the driver's seat for that decision, you were the master of your own destiny, you decided the coverages that you had or the deductible that you picked, I think the overall sentiments around insurance start to change. Everybody dislikes insurance because the day you buy it and the day you have a claim. And if you felt like you were the one, Alex, who made that choice, you wanted a little bit more, you wanted a little bit less, you know what you paid for, you know what you're getting. And then in the event that you have a claim, you get to say, you know what, I paid a little bit extra. This is going to be covered because I went in there and I did it. Or you say, wow, yeah, I just had a water leak and it's going to cost me $5,000, but I decided to increase my deductible this year from $1,000 to $5,000. That was on me, right? That wasn't my carrier denying the claim or telling me that I shouldn't do it. That, I think, starts to change the narrative. And I think that's something that embedded insurance can really take the lead on.
Yeah. That's feeling your pain about the motor insurance. It's gone up quite dramatically in the UK. I've reshot mine at the moment as well. I'm not happy with my quote. But I think it's some touch points, isn't it? I think we sort of lost... Sometimes we lose track of the amount of touch points, the opportunities for touch points, and the opportunities of value-added touch points. And therefore, you know, the dialogue's always been about how can we make it cheaper for the consumer or easier to sell them more insurance. And I think that's where embedded's kind of slightly gone awry for me sometimes, is that it's gone, how can we sell you an additional item of cover that you'll never go buy? I've never bought trip insurance along side buying a flight. I've never bought warranty. I've bought all of these things independently, but I've never done it at that point in time because it feels a bit misplaced. It's like, I know it's at the right point at which I might need it, but I also kind of, it makes me suspicious. It's like, I feel like they're offering me something that's not fit for purpose. And actually usually that's the case. So I think it's about using that. And something you talked about, I thought this is such an astute point. And embedded, we talk about distribution advantages, which is a little bit what we're talking about here. But, and you've touched on it, just what you said, but like you talked about embedded data advantages, which I thought was fascinating. Can you explain what you mean by that? And I think you touched on it a bit there, but dig into that. Because, you were saying we've got embedded data opportunities, embedded data advantages, which I thought was a really smart way of putting it.
This is, I think, the fun part of where embedded insurance is going. And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with what I think, you know, the embedded model originally, whether you're doing a warranty or trip insurance, right? That's a volume play. It's great, right? Because there are people that are going to check out and they're going to grab it. And that's really built the foundation of, I think, getting people to start thinking about insurance in a different way. But as you start to get into some of these more complex products, as you start to embed insurance in the actual workflows of where people engage with insurance, what Ryan and I looked at when we originally started this is, where is our underwriting advantage, right? We were two kids from the Midwest. We didn't go to Harvard or Stanford. We didn't have really strong insurance backgrounds. We didn't work for a reinsurer. We weren't chartered underwriters. We said, how do we figure out the advantage that we would have over some of these really big incumbents? And so I looked at my own experience as an agent. I only asked the questions of my clients that are required by the carrier, right? These are the 30 questions the carrier asks. I'm going to ask my client these 30 questions. It's going to generate a rate. But in today's day, in today's market, where can I get an edge, right? In insurance, where can I find the best risk? And so one of the big phrases we use here at OBIE, and I really try and push this home with people that just get started with us, is our thesis originally 5 years ago was, does good partner equal good risk? And what I can tell you and your listeners today is that really did play out. What I mean by that is, I can't ask you what your credit score is, right? I can't underwrite based on that here. But I do know that if you go to one of our lending partners, right, Kiabi, CoreVest, some of the big single family rental lenders here in the US, I know what your borrower profile looks like. We have a lender that doesn't do any loans for anybody that is below a 720 credit score. They have at least 2 to 3 other cash flowing properties, right? They have a certain target NOI that the lender agrees is attainable. And so how can I utilize and almost effectively underwrite our partners as an extension of the risk? What is the data that I can get from the partners? What can that client allow us to opt into them sharing in order for them to get a better rate, right? How can I make sure that the book that we're running is competitively advantaged by the data that I'm getting? And that's the incredible magic here, is that when you start mixing that in with both public and privately available data, I can tell you what, you know, the average rent might be in a certain census tract where this person is buying this property. And based on how it's currently rented or what they're expecting to actually be able to command, is that below or above market rent? Well, if it's above, then what does that say about the quality of the asset then, Alex? Is it better, in a better condition, better features, better amenities, right, than the average other property in that space? There's something really nice about it. Hopefully it's going to be well taken care of. And that's a good indicator, but the opposite is also really incredible as well. What does it say that a landlord or an owner cannot command market rent in a certain area compared to their peers? What is it about the quality of that asset? What is it about the condition of that asset that you can't command that? And so when you start to merge, you know, internally, you know, 30, 40, 50 different unique data points from both our partners and what we've been able to develop internally, you build a really good profile of both the property and the person that's managing it to help decrease that risk, right? That's I think where the magic is at. And that's why OBIE's loss ratio is, you know, very, very, very low compared to our peers in the market. It's because we have a really interesting and unique way of seeing inside of these assets in a way that your traditional carrier market just can't. Again, it's a model whereby you're going to that agent, and we love agents, we work with them, and those agents then have to go to the carrier. And that carrier is still asking for year built and square footage. Those are all publicly available data points at this point, right? What can they do to be more impactful about getting the data that really, I think, will give them a view into the people that they're actually insuring? I think that's what Embedded 2.0 can do. That gives you that distinct data distribution advantage that can really drive profitable insurance business.
And in many ways, that's been the secret source of good underwriting forever, right? Isn't it? It's like having a unique data point. What is your unique data point, and how can you utilize that to your advantage to kind of offer best of both worlds? It's like you're ensuring better risks and you're more accurately pricing as well. So yeah, it's fascinating. And I think as we move towards kind of more open platforms for more open banking, more open insurance, we're going to see even more transition into realistically much, much better underwriting. On a similar vein, actually, I was going to sort of, this is more going back to the distribution question. Do you white label the product, or is it always a, you know, it's always known to be OBIE that's the platform that is being embedded? Or
we do. We have gotten to a point now where we really kind of have three different solutions for folks. You know, as any startup years and years ago, we were all thanks to all people. Whatever way you wanted to distribute Obi is the way that I would, you know, I would let you do it. We're finally at a point now over the last, you know, 2 years or so where we've built the toolbox, right? Depending on what you want to do, it can be a kick out to a co-branded page. We can do that as quickly as, you know, an hour with you. We can do an iframe directly inside of your system. It's still going to kind of show Obi, but you know, it's a little bit more embedded inside of your experience. We can do that as well, all the way to that white labeled experience. The terms and conditions, the actual policy docs, everything is issued by Obi, but it looks like it's being offered, you know, directly inside of somebody else's platform in a way that I think makes a really good material impact on conversion. So we meet, again, our partners wherever they want to be. Wherever it is best for them and where they think that they're going to be able to have the best conversion is really where we want to be able to show up.
You've got what I was kind of interested in, because one of my things that I'm skeptical on, which I have no data about, which you might be able to solve this problem for, is just kind of the uptake versus kind of like a white label product versus kind of a non-white label product. And are there any sort of, you might not have this data, but I presume you probably do. So, you know, data seems to be your kind of like key driver. But kind of, are there some interesting trends between them? You know, are people more likely to take it up if it's white labeled, and therefore you're taking advantage of that distributor as part of the brand versus kind of something that's kind of not white labeled? Yeah, is there any sort of trends that you've kind of noticed within
that? Yeah, it's a great question. The further the embedded experience is, the higher your conversion and the higher the customer satisfaction, which is really where we want to get the market into. I do leverage the brand of my partners. Our customers may have never heard of Obi, but they might be originating several millions of dollars worth of debt with one of these lending partners. They already have established that trust, right? Yeah. We embed ourselves in white label directly inside of property management software solutions, something that you use to transact on a day-to-day basis and collect rent and you know, assess your tenants and you know, lease your spaces. We utilize that brand as an extension of Obi. We like to say, hey, you trust them, they trust us. We can be the right insurance partner for you. And here's why, right? So we always try and push people in that direction. Some businesses are more set up for that than others, depending on how tech savvy they are. But again, you know, we have found that, you know, the more that we can integrate into somebody's process, even if that's just a kick out to a co-branded page, right? That's not truly embedded insurance, but that link can kind of be inside of a process somewhere. Even if that's inside of an email, you know, if we can align ourselves to their process, where I think embedded can also be helpful and where we are hyper-focused on is we know what's going to move that lever depending on how you want Obi to show up in your experience. And so because of that, I think we not only become then your insurance partner, but also somebody that can help drive that conversion for you as well.
I think that's where they're sort of, what do I want to say? We had a brilliant conversation on here with Lou Oakley, who talked about the different types of embedded and also like almost a spectrum. And we've touched on it within this call, is just saying that's where I think, you know, embedded distribution, where it's just a sort of pop up, but it's an insurance product when you're buying a flight. I think that's why it doesn't work on me. It clearly does work, otherwise it wouldn't exist. So I'm not suggesting it doesn't, but I think when you're really kind of buying from someone you trust as a consumer already, that's where the magic happens. But yeah, it was quite nice to have confirmation of the theory. I know it wasn't the wildest theory in the world, but it always surprises me when it doesn't go far enough. And I think that's what I'm sort of angling towards. I've always been surprised that it's not been sort of more kind of truly embedded within the process. So you are almost unaware. And I think what we've seen that I found really interesting is some of the embedded offerings that we've got now. I think of a company called Armored, where they have essentially a security, you're buying a security product, but they have an insurance product that's attached to it that if anything gets stolen, you get a voucher to go and replace some tools. You don't know you've bought insurance, but actually what you've done is buy some insurance there. So I think embedded is such a fascinating area to play within. And I'm conscious of time on this, but I think this leads us quite nicely into this question, where I think insurance, we like to sort of talk about insurance, does it need a rebrand? But do I think it's potentially more that we need to like reframe risk management? I don't know if that kind of carries and if that makes sense to you.
Absolutely. I think one of the things we talk about a lot here is flipping the insurance narrative, right? We say that a lot here, and that's, you know, it's really a function of how challenging, again, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, there's 2 days that people really don't like insurance, right? It's the day that they buy it and the day that they have a claim. And if you can make both of those experiences a little bit better, a little bit easier, a little bit more transparent, the challenge is that people get frustrated with insurance because first they're buying something and they don't really know what they're getting out of it. And then when they do have a claim, they find out that they didn't buy the thing that they needed and that they would have bought had they known, right? And so we try and provide that transparency here at OBI, and hopefully in what we've seen with a lot of the newer insurtechs, that they're also trying to push that as well. But I think to your point, you know, the biggest piece of insurance is really incredible when you take a step back. Insurance is the thing that you're paying into. So that way, when your neighbor's home burns down, you're actually helping to rebuild that, right? The homes on your street, right? That is what you're paying into inherently, right? The health insurance that you're paying into, that is helping somebody else who might get sick. Somebody at OBI that, you know, you're paying into your general liability and somebody falls and gets hurt on somebody else in your community, you're helping to pay out that claim, right? It is probably the oldest and largest like social safety net that exists, right? That social contract between you and your fellow neighbor. And I don't think people really, you know, think about it that way and really consider it that way. And one of the things that, you know, Ryan, my co-founder, likes to talk about is that insurance is the thing that allows people to take risk. You're not going to start a business unless you know that there's something there to help protect you if something goes wrong. You're not going to buy that house if you know that, like, man, something could happen and the place could burn down, unfortunately, and there's nothing there to help make you whole, right? Insurance is the thing that allows, you know, industry and society to continue to move forward. And until we get away from the idea that, like, oh, I bought this insurance because I have to, and then they're never going to pay out a claim, until we start to change that narrative, people are going to continue to have those feelings towards it, right? And a lot of that, I think, can be solved by a better embedded insurance experience. Can you buy insurance during the experience where that insurance will actually come into play? And can you feel really educated? And can you feel like you were the person that made the decisions on those things and you have all the information available to you? Can we start to change the overall insurance experience for everybody? That's, I think, where, you know, where the industry is hopefully headed and what we hope to be contributing to.
Yeah, I think there's just a different interaction point. I mean, you know, case in point, I mean, we talked about it briefly. So I've got my car insurance is up in about 5 days' time. I've had an email from my insurer. They've known who my insurer is, but without finding my email, can I log in? Can I find my policy documents? It's just a painful experience. And this is I know who my insurer is, but I still can't get in. Now I need to be a little bit organized. Fine. But it also shouldn't be that difficult. So it's these touch points, and you go, every single touch point is an opportunity to win over a customer. And I think insurance has done a really bad job of kind of doing that. Clearly, businesses like yourselves are starting to do that much, much better. Talking about, I'm trying to make this the last question because I'm really conscious of time, but talking about, you know, insurance enabling business and enabling, you know, commerce, it has been a tricky time in the related areas of insurance that you work in the last few years. How has capacity and reinsurance capacity been for you in this period of time? Because it's been, you know, publicly quite challenging.
We're in a fortunate position that I think the original thesis around partner-based distribution has played out really well. So OBI's experienced, even in the last 5 years, record low losses, even in the property space. And so I think that's, you know, fortunately for us, we haven't had capacity challenges, but certainly the property market has been beat, you know, repeatedly over the last several years, right? You've got material inflation. You have obviously the, you know, unpredictable weather events, right? People always think, ah, it's all the hurricanes that hit Florida. And that's certainly a, you know, a piece to it. But when you have the unpredictability of, you know, winter storms in Texas or wildfires, whatever they might be, that's the thing that starts to really hit people. And then obviously, again, your currency market, right? So much of your capacity is based, in the euro or in the pound. And when that devalues against the dollar, even without everything we just talked about, inflation, replacement cost, claims, right? Suddenly you have 3, 5, 7% less capacity than you thought that you were actually going to have at the beginning of a certain year. So it's been a tough market, I think, for most people. I'm hoping that, by the end of this year, by the beginning of 2025, there's a light at the end of the tunnel there. Knock on wood, it's a low catastrophe year here in the States. So I'm hopeful. Fortunately, again, for us, we haven't had a problem with capacity. And, hopefully for our sake, that continues.
I hope so. But the good data and the good underwriting kind of puts you in the right position to do that, right? So a long way to continue. Aaron, thank you so much. I think it's a fascinating business. I genuinely do. I'm not always this sycophantic. I got quite cynical about Embedded. I really did. And I had lots of kind of conversations about Embedded. And I started to kind of go, the cynical thing, because it felt like the distribution place that we'd have. But I think what you've demonstrated and other businesses, and there's some really interesting plays in this Embedded that if we get it right, it gives us those advantages. So fascinating to see what you keep getting up to. But thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on the Leadership and Insurance podcast.
Thanks, Alex. This was great.
Thank you very much.